This, you, yeah, this is an offspring. That's an offspring of that.
You cannot be serious.
Jeez.
It's like back on the ground, punching each other. Fantastic.
Oh, boys. Just playing the introduction.
Oh, thanks, John.
Don't bring it down.
Tell you, this is you want to see what's going on off. Don is about as grumpy as 12 men. You're on the, there's something wrong with you, Don. I'm telling you that now. And you've got to get we've got
Can
our
you
guest
some
in.
Of those tablets we've, you want to calm me down.
We've got our guest in.
Thank you. What is it?
We've got our guest in. We've got our guest in. And Don has harangued him to within an inch of his life so much so that he said, I'm not sure why I've come in here.
That's heavy stuff.
It is heavy.
Don, stop. Don't have a private conversation with that. We're trying to introduce him. And I said to him, I get most of the information off the Wikipedia file. And he said, oh, why do you do that? Why don't you just say who he is? Well, I know who he is, but there's other parts of his makeup and his character that people might be interested in, and you wouldn't know what they are unless you look them up and research them, Don, rather than asking you.
Sorry, do you want me to do the introduction?
No.
Oh, have a listen to those two in unison.
So,
Bill and Ben, so, the flower pot. So, man. You can see they're
so
in the
So, to
same
our
pot,
guest,
gotcha,
before
mate.
I introduce so you, to our guest, this is my son Max. And you are, we're about to speak to you about your vocation and your profession, which made you the star you are today, and that is AFL football.
That's
or
subjective.
You don't think he was a star,
That's
AFL?
Subjective.
Think he was a star AFL, VFL footballer? If you don't think that, Don, we're going nowhere, mate. You may as well go out the back and look at my cars because you're being a complete and utter fuckwit. And if you don't mind me calling you a fuckwit, I'll just use that as a generic term every time I look at you and speak to you. Now, shut up, fuckwit. Max is my son here and he is up to date with modern football, which he might like to ask you about.
Yes.
So this man here, Don, played 19 seasons with the...
Where did you research this from? Wikipedia?
He said that, yes. I was listening.
Three times I said that. Played 19 seasons with the Essendon Football Club. He played 378 league games and he kicked 575 goals to boot. It's extraordinary when you think about it.
What, the fact that to boot?
Oh. How do you have the mental capacity to talk to him?
Can you just lock the door out? The man I'm about to introduce is about to leave. Just hold him back and just till we can get through this.
I can't, his centre of gravity is lower.
He played in back-to-back premierships, 84 and 85, I think against the Hawthorn Football Club, to be honest. He won four best and fairests for the club he played for, which was Essendon. He's probably only had one coach in his whole career. I'm not sure about that. Maybe it's Kevin Sheedy. Maybe he can tell us that. I could go on and on about his...
Please do. It sounds great, Sam.
No,
nice.
But I've watched this man and I think I played against him in my... as I was finishing, he was starting. And if anyone was ever going to be nominated as a legend of the game, not a Hall of Famer, this is the next man in line, in my opinion. He is the great Simon Madden.
Could I add to that too? He's had two coaches.
Do your research. So,
shut up. This is right off the top of my head. I'll rattle the bucket soon. It's Kevin Sheedy and yours over there, John Newman, as his other coach.
No, he hasn't had two coaches. He's had one.
You taught him
everything. I didn't teach him anything. This is not about me. This is about Simon Madden. And you said that it's subjective whether I say he was one of the greats of our game, and you said that's subjective. Who wouldn't agree with that, Don, please, before we actually ask him a question?
It's subjective. It's very hard to measure.
So you find it hard to measure that Simon
Can
Madden...
Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
What influence did John have as a rock coach on
Don.
Simon?
Excuse me. Hello. Good day, gentlemen. How are you?
Simon,
good.
I'm so sorry that this is disjointed.
No, if it's not called Two Grumpy Old Men, it should be. And I just want to make sure it's not Three Grumpy Old Men at the moment.
No, he's only 21.
No, I'm including me. You're going to turn me grumpy in a moment, sorry, you two. Okay. Now, Sam, firstly, welcome. Thank you for welcoming me. Very good to be here. I have played against both of you. So I remember Sam, when Sam was getting a bit older and I was a youngster, I could jump higher, I was more athletic, I could run faster, leap higher, and he kept getting the ball.
Yes,
so that was really annoying.
Were you playing at centre half back and he was a centre half
forward? No, this is when it was ruck. We were in the ruck. Later on he came along to Essendon as ruck's coach, and all of a sudden he said, look, you don't have to run straight at us and look angry. You have to come in from an angle. You have to jump early. You have to use your hand. You push the person off the line of the ball and you can hit with the opposite hand. And I said, hello, how long has this been going on?
Well, if you learned as a youngster, you would have played against Mick Nolan.
If you were a youngster,
you would have picked that up from Mick Nolan.
Well, Mick, one of the ones you can't do now, Mick Nolan, I remember, had my hand up in the air about a foot and a half over his. He hit it out of the way with one hand and palm with the other. I remember hitting the ground almost saying, where's my notebook? I've got to make a note of that one. That's a beauty.
Well,
and then you, Don, you have both have had influence on my career, and you had a couple on the field and off the field. Now, first, I think the first game I played against you, you kicked me in the ankle as a youngster. It wasn't hard. It was just a little get out of my way.
I should have kicked you harder.
Yeah, I know you should have.
Were you on the ground when I kicked you?
No, I was standing up, and I remember
I usually kick when the player was on the ground.
And I can remember saying, I don't know how to react to this. Should I get angry? Should I just go off the ground or whatever? So that was on the ground. But then off the ground, remember, you were the president of the Players Association, and I went on to be the president of the Players Association. So, gentlemen, thank you. You both have an influence on my career. So there you go. So don't be that grumpy.
Well, John, can I ask you, can I open the questioning?
Yes.
John's influence on you, you told about that other side. Now, he was a king hit merchant. We went to tribunal because he set me up in front of the boundary throw-in and then came with a big whoosho on the run-through from behind, round-armed me. Now, I saw you king hit Stephen O'Dwyer out at Windy Hill. Did you learn that off John to even up?
No, I never learned about evening up. I was just about... if you play, like, I was never suspended in my career, right?
I know, and this is why...
378 games now.
But you should have been suspended this game because you came up from behind and king hit Stephen O'Dwyer. It's the worst thing I've seen on football.
No, it's not.
Ball. Well, jeez, if that wasn't the worst thing I've seen football.
Now, I 378 games, if you say you haven't hit anybody in that many games, you're lying.
I saw you hit him. Why did you king hit him?
Because he hit me earlier.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Is that the reason?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't think he'd do that.
You know that day I had to go to the hospital afterwards? Had to go to the hospital afterwards and get a tooth taken out?
No. Well,
my elbow.
You should have seen
him. My elbow, I think it was. That's where it was one of the hard-fought games between the two of us. And I get along with Steve very well.
You both went to the same school.
Right. Yeah, St. Bernard's boys. So we had a great running around.
His face was a mess at half-time, I remember.
Don. We're going to have to rescue this interview, Don. All you're just speaking absolute drivel. You've accused him of king. It's how he's explained about that. Don't go on and on about it. Now, Max will verify this. You've spoken to him for the last 5 minutes with your eyes shut. Can you not think of anything to say unless you close your eyes and think about it?
I find it very hard to look at a man that can king hit someone else, but you could because you were an expert at coming up from behind.
I'll king hit you in a minute.
I'll turn my back for you.
That's
and you
right.
can come from behind. You'd know how to do that.
I do. I'll do it beautifully.
So bad.
No, beautifully.
Honestly.
Now, so Simon.
Yes.
Young Max here.
Young Max is a rather tall fella too.
Very tall. He's a great student of the AFL game.
Yes.
He did not have the joy or privilege of seeing you play, and I've spoken.
There's a thing called YouTube, Sam. You can go back and have a look.
It wasn't around when I was growing up.
I'll find it.
Yeah.
So your two great games that I saw you play were in 84 and 85, two premierships against Hawthorn, I believe.
And ask who the ruckman was for Hawthorn.
Oh, shut up.
I think
Chris Langford was one who had absolutely no idea in the ruck that day.
I think Chris Langford should thank me because he should thank me because they put him in the ruck. I got a North Swift medal. They put him to fullback. He played 300 games at fullback. I thought he saved his career.
Jeez, you made a fool of him that day.
No, I didn't make a fool of him. I just knew what I was doing.
Oh, come on, Simon. I just knew what I was doing. No idea in the ruck.
Well, no, I knew what I was doing and he didn't.
Exactly.
There you go. That's all. That's all.
Don needs a sabbatical.
You need to shut up.
So you played, I think you played under one coach for the whole...
No, this is a lot of people did. I started very early. Now, remember, Sam, my first year...
Yes.
I'm showing my age now. My first year was the last year of black and white TV. And some people don't even... I'm not talking about the colour of the cabinet.
65.
I'm not talking about the colour of the cabinet. I'm actually 65. Talking about the screen. It's
we
black
could
and
go
white.
Off air,
it's 1965.
And
no, the last colour TV was 19. So last year of black and white TV, 1973.
Yes, I'm so sorry.
Did you start that early?
No, 1974 actually. I lied, but
that is correct. No, I got there. You're quite right. What was in 66? Decimal currency.
Yeah, that's right. 13th of February 1966. Des Tudden, first coach.
Was he really?
Scared the hell out of me at 16. Because my first game I was 16.
Yeah, I know.
And my first opponent was Cowboy Neil. How's that for a start?
Yeah, jeez.
Then the second coach was the great Bill Stevens.
Oh,
shit. No, rest in peace, a lovely man. Yeah. And then Barry Davis was the third coach.
You've had three, four.
And then I've got Sheets. So some people don't know what it's like to have another coach. I could compare Sheets against the other three.
Well, this has brought up a thing for me.
A thing?
Well, it's been like a revelation. Wikipedia is wrong. Now, he's gone to Wikipedia and said you've only been...
No, I'm not having it all
wrong.
So we should get to Wikipedia and get all this corrected?
I didn't say I got that off Wikipedia.
You can contribute to it. You can contribute to it and actually put some money in to make it better if you want it.
I did not say that I got that off Wikipedia. I said I think you probably only had one coach.
Well, I know
and
players
have now enlightened us.
I know some people who have only played under Sheets, so they can't compare. And I talk about Sheets as, you know, there's a line that Sheets walks down the middle. One side is genius, one side's insanity, and he wobbles from left to right. But if you take 27 years, any club says 27 years, six grand finals, four premierships, double your membership, take the club around the world, would you accept it? Of course you would. It's been amazing for the Essendon Footy Club.
Now I'm going to get on to the thing that crueled Essendon and they've never recovered since, but I want to do that later. This is and that is the greatest disgrace that this competition has endured and overseen, and that's the drug scandal at Essendon.
Supplements scandal.
Yes, exactly, but it was turned into a drug scandal with no evidence at all. We'll come back to that. Were you going to say something?
I'd love to ask some questions, Simon.
Go ahead.
About rucks and this day and age and coaches, because you obviously you're under four coaches, but Kevin Sheedy is one that I'd love to talk about. Do you watch any of the modern game right now? Right, so Leon Cameron resigned after 10 years with GWS, and I just want to know how much of an influence is a coach on an AFL team?
Oh, very, very much.
Ben Rutten is criticised just about every single week for the position that Essendon are in. And
now, it's an interesting one. Now, like your coach is very important, but in any club, you've got to think probably an order of people that influence the club is... your recruiting manager, your CEO, and your coach, in that order. So you get the players, then you get the club running well, then you get the team running well.
But that's don't you think the board of directors have an influence of governance?
Long term, I'm on the board of this.
I know,
so
I was going to
so
lead
long
to
term,
that.
Long term, yes. And the idea is, remember, you're a director, so what you do is you direct the club.
That's right.
And the executive execute the plan. Right. So what you've got to be very careful is that everybody wants to go into the footy department and speak to the coach and tell him what to do. As directors, you can on occasion delve deeply into what's happening, which we have done on a couple of occasions, but really you put the people in place and then you've got to give them the time, effort, energy, direction to do their job. And I think that's what a director has to do. So at the moment... when Leon and the other thing about coaches is he's been there a long time.
Yeah,
he's done a great job with them, nearly got him a premiership. But the trouble is that it wears you out. And if by some of the things he said, if he said, look, it's time, and a lot of that's not about what he's doing, it's about how he's feeling, about how the coach, and it is the most scrutinised job in the world. Absolutely. In sports coach. You can run BHP, you could run some of the biggest countries in the world, and they probably want to listen to you. Well, Paul Little, for example, Paul Little runs a massive organisation, and we maybe want to hear from him two or three times a year, the shareholders and the media, when he makes a big decision. When he was president of Essendon, they wanted to hear from him three times a day. So he's one of them scrutinised. Now, here's one, Sam, and you both like this, is that, Don, that I remember when the tipping point was there was 850 players and then there became 850 journalists, so one journalist to match per player. AFL registered journalists. There is now over 2,000, nearly 2,500 registered AFL journalists, so including social media and mainstream media, and they've all got something to say.
Yeah.
And that, so all of that is good. And of course, football in Melbourne is not just a sport; it's cultural. It pervades our lives. So you've just got to be careful that we don't listen to the media. As well, we should be careful about listening to the media, even though we love it, about what's going on and what's really going on, because there's agendas, there's viewpoints, there's opinions, and
That's very good that you said that, because I would like to bring up an incident that happened over the weekend for me. Saturday night, nothing to do at home, so I turned the television on. I turned it off when Essendon, led by Dyson Happel, ran through the banner at the SCG prior to the game.
Yep.
You know the reason I turned it off?
Because you had all those people on the ground that
exactly.
weren't pretty people?
I cannot understand, and you're on the and the frivolity that I was shown by the television cameras as he walked out and whatever else. Hey, my friend, I'm not saying and I'm not turning back the clock, but as an educated player said to me, Ray Wilson, an academic that I played with, back in our time, he said, playing football was just like going to war. You had to psych yourself up to go out because...
Maybe it was a bit like that.
You can appreciate it, and so can John. That was his, and he's an academic intellectual, an amiable friendly. Yet I see this, you have got a problem... At Essendon, my friend.
I don't think so.
You're saying that.
Let me have a say that. When Des Tudden was the coach, so I was 16-7 and Des Tudden was the coach, and he said, do this, you'd say, why? And he said, because I say so, right? You say to the young people now, and this is not just in football, this is where I work with organisations outside of sport, is if you say to a young person, do this, and they go, why? And I'd be interested to hear your point. Why? You say, because I say so.
You're pointing to Jack then.
Jack, as a younger person.
Max. Oh, I'm sorry, Max.
Max, I'm following you now. I'm going crazy too. Yeah. Sorry, excuse me,
no,
Max.
It's Don's fault.
I led me that down. Now, if you say to a young person, now do this, and they go, why? And you say, because I say so. They will either indirectly or directly say, well, they won't, because I say so. They're on equal ground. If you say to a young person, now do this, and they go, why? And you go, for me, this. B, for you this, probably that first, for you this, for me this, for the organisation this, and the greater good, and they listen to you and believe you, they will do it better. The concept of going to war in sport is not something young people will connect with, right? It's a sport for young
people. But that's the most basic.
The way you play.
And said, war, you mentioned war. That is the most basic of things. Two people fighting.
No, but he's explaining why it's not happening,
We are lucky enough to be involved in Anzac Day, right? So the Anzac Day match. Now, if you're trying to compare, my dad was a soldier, right? He went to Egypt and New Guinea.
Yep.
Now, if you try and compare what happens on a footy field to what happens on a battleground, now you got it out of perspective. One of the great things about Anzac Day is we can have a football game to celebrate the freedom that we have because of the people who went to war. That's the connection between the two things. Never say, I have my father's medals, right, and I am not worthy, and you're allowed to wear them, I am not worthy to wear those medals on Anzac Day, because I see that as a completely different thing compared to going out and playing football. Now, mate, we were, We've got on the battlefield. No, I don't want to go too deep in money. On the battlefield, there's no umpire. At least on the ground, there's an umpire who says you can't do that. On the battlefield, but you know, the whole lot of things happen that we have no control of. Anyway, I don't want to go down that path. Other than to say, Dyson Heppel has been a great captain for Essendon. Now I know it. You're starting to sound like a really old man, but he's done a great job, and he asked for that, and the club said yes.
Oh, mate! One thing that turns me off football nowadays is the fact that when these blokes celebrate, they bring their bloody babies out onto the ground. Oh, why not?
My kids. I took my 300th game. My young fella came out the ground with me. God. And he had a great run. Had a great run. So I think. I think we've got side conversation over here.
No, but I'm saying if Dad wants to ask a question after he shuts up.
Go on.
No, I was just going to say that I think that Dyson Heppel's been great, and if that was something to do with the celebration. Now, remember, we've gone through 2 years of nobody can be at the football. You don't think it's a great idea to get people onto the ground and celebrate a 200-game career?
No.
All right, that's it. I say yes. We're going to agree to disagree.
Also, there we are. I can't believe you say what you see on TV. I know personally from talking to some of the boys at Essendon, he is a great internal captain and person.
Our Max is a great Essendon supporter.
Good man, Max.
No, he
good
is.
Man.
A huge
now, do you understand what I said about if I tell you you're going to do it?
That's Dad's philosophy. Do as I say, not as I do. In the very times he talked to me, that's what he used to say. But North Melbourne is a massive example of that. Who's the coach? John Noble. He got in trouble for a
David,
spray.
His name
David
is,
Noble,
that's
sorry.
His brother, John.
Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, for a spray.
He got in trouble for a spray. Some of the players took offence to it. And
We can have a whole conversation about resilience. And resilience is learning how to get knocked down and get up. Well, you can't develop resilience if you don't get knocked down.
Exactly.
So what about the 2,000 journalists, or some of them, who pinged the Melbourne coach at the start of the year for having a gamble and joining the frivolity?
For being human.
And for winning the club its first premiership in 60 years. And they wanted, we had all the, David Schwartz came out and said, oh, it's a disgrace that he's not a role model.
You can't be stuck.
God almighty.
You can't be stuck in 1980 or 1990 or even 2000.
No, so you're part of this woke begrudge.
No, I'm not.
You
no, I'm
are.
Not, I'm not part of woke.
Because your political leanings and your academia and whatever else. So you're part of this woke minority that exists nowadays.
No,
Simon.
I'm not part of
Sorry,
a woke
where
minority.
The politics
but
come
I'm a realist. I'm a realist
no,
in the way the world's
wokeness.
Going.
Oh, shut
up.
You're
He's
a contradiction.
I'm too old. I can't be woke. I'm too old.
You're
nobody
a,
let,
you're
nobody
a
lets
contradiction.
My age be woke. Nobody at my age is woke. They won't let me be anyway.
Well, speaking of where you came from, it almost looks from the Wikipedia that you were going to train to be a priest you studied at the Australian Catholic University.
How many children have you got? 17, no, it's four.
Four, the four priest grown came children. Around and said that's enough.
No, I think he did.
Almost said that you were trained at, yes, Australian.
I wanted to be a Christian brother. Then
You're
some.
Joking.
No, then somewhere
have you got a tendency?
No. Hang on. But somewhere around 12, the hormones kicked in, and I noticed girls, and I went, "You're beauty."
So you changed outlook. So you were.
Oh, I just realised
this side of the fence up till 12, and now you're heterosexual.
No, I wasn't anything.
I think you got a problem.
I think you want to make
you
want to make me too woke.
In jail,
you want to make me too woke.
You could have finished up in jail if you didn't have this epiphany at 12.
No, you're just a hormone.
It says that you studied at the Australian Catholic University.
I was thinking
between the lines, I thought, this sounds like you were just headed towards a religious bent,
it was Mercy Teachers College, it wasn't that fancy, but now it's ACU.
I know.
And it's a very good university, a whole lot of other universities, and it happens to be run by the Catholics. And also, they don't have to be Catholic to get in anymore. They do nursing, they do a whole lot of courses. It's just another university now.
So this is where they're getting their influence, the Catholic Church, through all of this.
Well, I don't know where you're going with this from. I just call the university. It's going to be a woke leftist university now, is it?
So Simon had also said that you are head of Simon Madden Consulting.
Simon Madden Consulting.
And what is that, please?
Now, here's the sales speech. SimonMadden.com.au. There's a sales
Did you know this, Don? This is why I got this from Wikipedia.
Yeah, I know what he does. Because I've had conversations with him before.
I work with organisations, with their people. about what I call sustainable high performance, so how to get good and stay good within your workplace. And I work the individual, the team, the leadership and the culture. I've been doing that for the last 12, 13 years. So everybody sees me as originally being a teacher, which I was. Then I moved into the world of business and I've worked in small, medium, large, national, international, my own business for 25 years. And I see where a lot of businesses don't know how to get to their people.
And the fact that you were extremely successful at the game that you played, AFL football, that would give credibility to what you speak about, not only do as I do, but do as I say.
So being a teacher, understand education. Being in high-level sport, understand high performance. Being in business, small, medium, large, national, international, owned, so I understand business.
What business were you in?
I was in IT. I've been in the media, IT, and my own. The IT business was small, medium, large. It grew as I was part of it as well.
So it said also, this is in your general profile, it said that you are, this amazed me, this that someone ranked you or you've been ranked as the fifth best player to ever play for Essendon. I would like to know who the four are. Probably they would say John Coleman.
Well, I'm not sure. I think I'm happy to be there, mate. They've got, in those particular
who would
order,
you say
pretty close, they've got Dick Reynolds, John Coleman, Bill Hutchinson, James Hurt. I think Hurdy's three, then Hutchinson, and then me.
Is that James Hurd is three? Is
I
he
think it's three or four. I'd have to go back and have a look, yeah.
Well, now
this is terribly. I really do.
Yes,
I really
it is,
do
Don.
Hate this type of ranking within a team sport. It's very subjective.
That
isn't
is very subjective.
It's a conversation piece. And we're
know,
having
John,
a good
no,
conversation about
no, no, no. I must because
it.
I've got a jumper. I've got a jumper on my wall that says that, so it must be true.
I'm glad you brought up James Hurd because James Hurd, I think you played one season in the side.
Well, I actually played one game with him. So there you go. So I've actually crossed paths.
That's right. You started. He started in 91, and you finished in 92. Or
that's
vice
right,
versa.
And I think I finished in 92. Some say I should have finished in 90, but I kept going for two more years, mate. Played the contract out, made sure I got paid.
So we both will go ahead.
Yeah.
No, so we may as well get on to this now, Don. So the great James Hurd,
yes,
who you say is ranked number three. Absolutely.
One of the time and space men.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Just makes his own time and his own space on the ground. Very few do it. Very few do that.
Had his reputation sullied beyond almost redemption, almost couldn't reclaim his reputation. Yeah. And if I could mention some of the media, I'd love to mention some people like Caroline Wilson, people who
AFL.
ripped that club to bits with no basis of any evidence at all, just sheer hearsay. And what do you think? Was the that club has never recovered from that?
I think
the trouble is, a
lot of other clubs might have failed. And to our supporters, you've got to say thank you because they stuck with us. So I reckon five years we're heading in the right direction, and then 2 years of COVID. So not only did we just have to try and rebuild the club and players missed the whole season. And I said about Hurdy, and I have great respect for Hurdy. The only thing I would accuse him of is being a young, naive coach, and that he had a plan and he had an idea, and you say everybody's on the same page.
Do you think he's guilty by association?
Well, no, I think he's probably yes, because there's
that brings up the other thing I'd like to question. Do you think that brings up guilty by association, even his career as a footballer?
Oh no, I don't think it sullies his career as a footballer.
Well,
no,
guilty by association because he had a private trainer.
No, mate, everybody's had. How many people have had private trainers? Like the first bloke that have a private trainer. Some blokes have had kicking coaches, had marking coaches,
well,
fitness.
Depends on who your private trainer or your kicking coach is.
Well, so what are you actually saying, Don? That James Hurd is
now
his career.
Be careful. We'll get the lawyer. Twenty places in a minute. No, I have no problems with that.
Were
you on the board at that stage?
No, I got on the board after. Oh no, I got on the board not when it happened, but after it happened. The people wanted me to come on board because I'd been Players Association president. I'd been in the club, etc. What I wanted to say about this is, so I can give you an hour and a half dissertation, of which about 10 minutes you'd be bored, because there's so much information out there the public don't have, and the public just take the top 5% and the headlines and the big stories and the loudness. Just think about this, and you as being a previous leader of the AFL Players Association, think about this. If 34 builders on a building site had been accused of taking some substance that was apparently illegal, but they weren't sure it was illegal until afterwards, and then had never failed a drug test, right? Never failed a drug test, and then were found, firstly by one body, said, no, a local body, no, you're not guilty, and then said, no, hang on, let's go to an international body. Right, now think about this. If those builders, they could take their case to the High Court of Australia, right? The stepping stones go to the High Court of Australia. What we've done in sport is we have signed that away. For sports
signed
people.
What away?
So at this right now, think, because the final court of arbitration for a sports person is WADA, which is a semi-legal firm based in Canada using French law. How would you reckon
Based
in Canada using French law. How do you think the building union would go with that?
Well, I'm I agree, right? Because so using that in my case.
So the AFL
but this is not just our sport in general.
Yeah, but they hitched
general.
Their wagon to sport, yeah, WADA,
sport,
didn't they?
Yeah, sport in general.
And WADA actually did them over. Played the Mary Hill with a little club at the bottom of a
general,
country.
Sport in general has signed away, and this is as a worker. This is not as a sports person. They are now professional workers, right? They are athletes, but they have contracts. They're actually paid employees, and yet we still do not have the rights of every other worker in Australia. Written, spoken, and authorised by Simon Madden.
Sorry to be self-indulgent, but I'd object just hang on. I would object to that because in my case, I played on a drug called BTZ.
Oh, here we go.
And now, that has now been banned. You cannot get BTZ for, I don't think, because I've tried and I can't get it, for pain and inflamation.
Well, we'll be very now. We've got to be careful down this path, mate, because in America, think about this. In America, and we are Australia's the second most litigious nation in the world behind America. The NFL players sued the NFL for a concussion. It's going to be a whole story about that.
That was on the go when we were in the association.
Yeah, I know. And so, and then they then sued the helmet companies for about $500 million because they said they were safe and they weren't. And now, just what you're saying, that players are actually and I haven't kept up with the latest, players in America in the NFL are suing the league for the use of painkillers by saying to them, take this painkiller, we'll put you on the ground, okay.
Mate, this is where I come in. I will never sue, and John will never sue for all his. We took this on knowing we were in a dangerous industry that will have ramifications, and these people.
But was that towards the end of your career, did you know that, or your first game, did you know that?
First game, I knew that, and as I became more aware being in the association, knowing the litigious nature and the way society was going, I would never, ever sue, although we're putting up with the ramifications of what occurred when we played.
No, I have a little bit of brain damage. I actually had a brain scan from my hearing, and they said, oh, by the way, your brain's not real good in that point, only a little bit, but we are not suffering as much as some other people are. So
that's subjective because we don't know. We can't measure.
Well, the trouble is,
measure that.
Well, you can't have a great measurement, but you can actually have a brain scan and see that there are actually.
Can I bring it back? Can I? Because I'm interested in you as an individual and your career, because you know, playing against you, you had to be aware of all your opponents, and I looked at other things when I came up or matched myself in your case, in every opponent, what they did off the field. Now, did Essendon, when you were a young player, you said you were 16, you weren't physically developed, did they try and make a position player out of you? You started in the ruck, but because I evidence this by the fact of recruitment, they got Stephen Talbot from Richmond and Bernie Jones from Hawthorn as ruckman.
Yep.
Now, at that stage, which way you went, I don't know. But at that stage, were they trying to make a position player out of you, hence the fact that they went out and got two ruckmen?
Couldn't repeat that question, could you, Don?
What a great question.
In other words, I tell you what, but just interesting, just on that, so my first 3 years, I played in the forward pocket, and a fella called by the name of Graham Moss played in the ruck. He wasn't a bad ruckman.
Yep.
And I learned from him that if you first ruck, you give the other bloke about 5 minutes in the ruck, and you're the main ruckman. And I reckon I got five. So I was a position player, and I did come second in the Brownlow playing at centre forward one year. Just thought I'd throw that one in.
What year was that, please?
Oh, I can't remember. It's 80...
Go on.
83, I think. Oh. 83, something like that. But anyway... always said about players is that if you only, and I've said this to all the ruckmen I've you know, dealt with or spoken to, if you just play in the ruck and that's all you can do, they'll put you in the middle and you'll play in the ruck and then they'll put you on the bench. If you can go forward and kick a goal, play a bit of forward work, you will, two things will happen. You'll spend more time on the ground and they'll pay you more money. So to be able to develop more than just being a ruckman is really, really important.
That's right. And but what is this what they tried to do in your case?
Trying all different balances. You're always trying different things. I remember I played one game in the wing, and if you don't want to do something, first time you do it really badly, and I'll never do it again. And I was a very bad wingman. They played me centre half back, I think, a couple of times. I played full back a couple of times, but that was only fill in. Centre half back, I think David Clark kicked 6 goals on me, so they didn't do that again. So they put you back in the ruck, back in the forward.
You staggered, seeing as you kicked 575.
Can I do my sportsman's night here, Sam? Now I've spent two thirds of my time in the ruck and one third in the forward line. I kicked 575 goals. They had left me in the forward line the whole time, I would have kicked 1,725 goals and been the leading goal kicker. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I have no doubt of that, Simon.
No, I don't think so at all.
No, Simon, are you staggered at the disinterest they have in accurate goal kicking?
Can I just on big fellas, have a look at 2 metre Peter at Essendon.
Right? Who?
Star.
2 metre Peter.
2 litre Peter now.
That's right.
Yeah. Who's 2 litre Peter?
Come on.
Peter Wright.
Who?
Peter
Wright, the big forward, right? He's 6'6", he's 2 metres, right?
Oh, the redhead bloke.
Oh, there we go.
I watched it the other week and this kid showed a bit of potential.
No, but you watch his style, right? Out of all the things, you watch his style. His style is magnificent. So was Peter McKenna's, funny about that. So was Pluggers. Runs straight, drops the ball straight, follows through straight, kicks straight, high kick for a standing shot for goal. It amazes me how many times I watch it footy now, I watch the game, the bloke on the mark, and it's not somebody who's 50, 60 out trying to kick, you know, do over what they can kick. The blokes who run, if they're a left footer, run left and then kick right, or they're right footer, they curve right, kick left. I can't believe how many blokes are allowed to do it. Then you watch somebody like Peter come in and say, by the way, this is the way it's done. When I got to Essendon, I couldn't kick, right? I'd never been taught to kick. So I was in the remedial kicking group, which was me and two blokes on the wing teaching me how to kick. So I remember really specifically what you have to do to be a very good kick at goal. And I developed that like a 5-iron and a driver. I had a one style for within 30 metres and another style from outside of 30.
Yeah, but that's common sense, isn't it?
Yeah, but common sense is not that common.
But extraordinary, both of you, isn't it extraordinary that the thing that wins games is accurate goal kicking, and why the forwards keep leading out to the pockets because they have to kick on an angle.
Well,
and
that's because they don't want the defence have more numbers in it. If they kick in the middle, you're going to come out. But I was going to say, at one stage you had a phys ed bloke say to me, you know, if we do this, you get a 5% increase, and if you can do this, you get a 2% increase. You do this, you get a 1% increase. And I thought to myself, you know, if you kick the goal, that's 6 points. If you kick a point, that's 1 point. That's a 600% increase in what you're doing. It amazes me. I understand around the body kick. Now, there's a whole lot of biometrics about if you're kicking on the angle around it, it's actually a motion that's good for your body. But there's a certain distance you can't get that with. And that standing shot for goal from a distance. The other one too is running into goal. You know what you should do if they're running into goal and they'll be in between? Just kick it to the goalkeeper. I mean, the goal umpire.
Yep.
He stands right in the middle of the ground. Just kick it in. But they're not that common. You have this. I was having a great conversation with Paul Salmon the other week.
Oh, shit.
Hey, there you go. Lovely bloke. 300 games. And we just talked about the wisdom you have now that you don't know. You've built up all this knowledge over years, and you have much more knowledge.
You should have had this when you were a player.
I know this. I'm saying you have all this knowledge now that you've got older that you didn't have when you were 18 or 19. It's built upon layer, year after year. You did not have that at the time.
There's so little interest in clubs kicking the ball properly, and you've just said that it is a simple philosophy. Why doesn't someone go down there and specifically train the people who more often or not are going to get the ball? Don't worry about the people on the back line so much, but the people generally on the forward line have someone do a bit of time and motion study about how to kick the ball accurately, because it's just almost ignored. No one seems to give a stuff if they miss
set shots. I don't know how much they do, but one of the great things is we now have a little portable camera called a phone that you could wander out in the ground. I did this with my daughter, who at 28 played her first year of AFL footy. Loved it, but then moved overseas, so I didn't play anymore. She said, I want to develop my kicking. I said, okay, I'll stand on the mark, you kick, and I'll put my camera on you and video it, and then you stop, you look, and you go, now see what you did there? Let's have another go at this. You can have instant feedback from a camera on any field, in any footy game, any league around Australia, around the world. Mm-hmm. Just stand there and go, we're going to do this. Because you know where you teach people to kick for goal? I'll tell you, this is where people, you take the centre square, forget about the goals because they are distractions. So what you do is you go and get the bloke, you kick the ball from one end of the line on the side of the square.
Yep.
And the person, so they kick at one end and you send the other. And you get them to run along the line and kick to you. All of a sudden you develop a whole straightness to it. And it's very easily measured. You don't have to buy any other material. You use a football and there's a line on the ground. And that's where you start. And then after a while you say, I will introduce two posts. Because what they are is they're a distraction. Once you get your kicking right, you just pick somebody in the grandstand behind the goals, a sign on the – you just kick to that.
Well, that's what Peter Hudson used to do.
Oh, of course he did. And funny how – he was all right, wasn't he?
The other side I would go a bit further is increase the degree of difficulty. And what what I did was always kick from an angle which made the goals
smaller.
Yeah. So then you have to really get it right. But I would like – seeing we're having an intellectual conversation on this –
I don't know about that one.
Like to add, and I wonder whether you thought of this and John's thought of this, is the fact that players are very limited in kicking for goal. For example, the drop punt is now used. Why haven't they perfected the torpedo punt, which if you were to able to execute – you could kick it from 60 metres without a problem.
Rip, mate, I'm on your
and
side.
I evidence that.
I don't like to agree.
I'll evidence this by a man that played for Geelong who was an exponent of it, who taught me, was Doug Wade.
Yes, Dougie Wade, very good player. Funny how he was fairly accurate too, wasn't he?
Very accurate.
Very good style.
Yep.
And the way he explained to me is... And I had my way of kicking a tall, but when I listened to him, holy mackerel, it changed, and I had an immediate effect upon my kicking for goal.
I've got a feeling no club does what you just said then about the simple thing of kicking along a line or using a mobile phone. They just pay lip service and they just overlook the fact
John,
that it's part of the game.
Do you think people are scared because they don't want – these people are getting a lot of money for the positions that they're in and they're too frightened to admit, maybe I am wrong, I haven't got the acquiring mind, and if I show my inadequacy, I will not have a job.
No,
sometimes clubs couldn't afford it. They're paying players heaps of money.
We're talking about coaches, my friend.
Yeah, but
it's become an invasion sport. So like basketball, soccer, everybody's up one end, everybody goes down. Now, if everybody fills in your forward line and you've got two Dustin Fletchers in your side, you just make sure you kick it to him about 65 out and get him to kick the goals. All of a sudden you can't flood back. If you did three or four of those a game, they can no longer just do the flood back game. Savrocka, some of those goals, if you developed – I can remember once in a state game getting a mark on the corner of the 50 line mark and the boundary line. So I'm looking around. I remember looking around for to pass because people in my team had known that I couldn't kick that far. And they all just waited because in a state game, they sort of go, oh, you'll do this. And I thought, geez. So very lucky, I did a tour. It worked. It went straight through the middle from 55 out on an angle. And I ran back to the middle like I've done that all the time. I was going to jump around and say, my God, what about that? But blokes can do that regularly. They can actually do that.
If you're taught and you're confident in your execution.
Now, something we all have in common, and I wanted to come with you two, is about this, because in the paper this morning or in one of the media outlets, they're talking about...
One of the 2,000 journos writing story to get noticed with no logic.
The centre bounce, should they take away
the bounce? I really wanted to talk to you about this too.
Do we take the bounce away? And also I want to talk about the line and the circle because I have a very interesting view about that. But to me, There are so many good umpires out there who can't bounce the ball. It's the only sport where we want the person whose most skill should be decision-making, some person who should be decision-maker, has to have an extra skill of bouncing the ball. One of the hardest things...
It's unique, isn't it, to the sport?
So I want to ask two questions that leads up into all of this. So what starts it off is Scott Pendlebury came out a couple of days ago before the round started and said, why don't we scrap the centre bounce because we throw it up, there's no time wasted, we all get into it. And I thought we've had more ruckmen go down this year than anything else, and especially with PCL injuries. Something that Don said last week is the knee-on-knee clashing. So is it safer for ruckmen to have that bounce and have that unpredictability when that ball's up in the air, they're going left or right? Or is it more dangerous for them when the ball's straight up in the air?
Well, I don't care if they... If you want to go to that part, I don't care if they bounce or throw it up right now. When they brought... Remember...
Oh, hang on, mate. There is a real difference.
Hang on, Don. Let him speak.
Have you ever seen a PCL done around the ground or at a boundary throw? No.
No.
No, PCLs. What? They don't run straight at each other. One of the things is when they asked me... Because remember, it was Thompson and Dempsey, one grand final, decided they wouldn't run at the ball, they'd stand underneath the ball, throw it up, and they wrestled. It was the ugliest thing, and the knee-jerk reaction is, we've got to change it. So
that's well done, Simon.
What happened with the line, you put a line down, you automatically say, I have to be either side. You run at each other. Before the line, you could be, and you did this, you could be anywhere, you're facing any direction at the centre bounce, you could be have your back to your goal, jump, and hit the ball behind you, or hit, didn't matter. So what happens is they put this line in, and so they asked me, what should we do? Should we put a circle in? I said, what you should do is take the line out and put a circle, a little bit larger, a little bit smaller, doesn't matter, and then you can run from any angle and go back to what it used to be. Because it was only introduced because one pair of ruckmen decided they could not move to the ball.
And it also brought in a little bit of a sidelight to that. Also brought in a teammate of John's who couldn't play the ruck, and that was Rod Blake. But bring that line in, and he could jump because you couldn't come from an angle.
Well, I know there's three types of ruckman. So me, I was a leaper, right, and learnt that from Sam because he had to come in at the angle. Justin, my brother, 6'10", he was the tall bloke. And then you get the bustling, at the smaller bustling strong. So, and it was great, the great competition between the three of those on a different day is I know when I played against Justin, he said if I just ran straight at him and tried to jump, he's going to be taller than me. If I come in on an angle and jump a bit earlier.
Yeah, but you could jump into him too, couldn't you?
Yeah, you did. And so I would say if you want to take out PCL injuries in the ruck, well, I think we want the bouncing the ball, we want the game to be so precise, right? So we have to have an umpire. If the umpire's not sure about our goal, we have to go to the TV. So it's got to be that precise, da 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 da. So if you want it to be precise, throw the ball up. But if you want to take out PCL injuries, forget the line, put in a circle, start outside the circle, run anywhere you like.
But yeah, but you're also taking out the uniqueness of our game for
ask the Americans. Americans have got a lot of uniqueness about it. They can't believe we can run into each other like that with no padding and run around on the ground that big. Right? So there's uniqueness in it already.
Yeah, but hang on, the uniqueness to us is the fact that umpires could bounce the ball around the ground and in the centre. Yes. And I believe they're taking this out because they want women included in umpiring.
Even before we brought females into football, as in proper football now, not just, hopeful football years and years ago, proper football and umpires, before they brought the girls in, there's dozens and dozens of great umpires, male umpires, who could not get an elevation to a better league because they couldn't bounce the ball. It's the only sport where the umpire
and has another skill. As a ruckman, Simon, I don't know about you, but we had a fast bowler called Froggy Thompson who represented Australia, was an AFL umpire. Now, even umpires, you had to be aware of their capabilities when it came to bouncing the ball.
Okay. I always said umpires, watch the bloke practice. Is it going to be high? Is it going to be low? So you pick that early on before you even start the game.
So this is
authorised by Simon Madigan, right?
We could go on all this about
the football. It's very... We're giving an insight into football that people don't understand, John.
I just said this you is are. Very interesting, Don. Just for the time constraint of doing this, we would like to ask Simon. He did say, and quoted, I got this out of Wikipedia, Don, I'm sorry, but he did say you can take Essendon...
Essendon, you can't take Essendon out of the boy. In actual fact, that was my mother's quote.
Right.
I didn't disagree with it. So I didn't go to Sydney.
So that's what that was about. You were offered $500,000 Hang on, this is what... $550,000 in
1985.
Shut up.
Fuck me. Gee, I nearly got it out. You were offered $550,000 in 1986.
Wow. Yeah, start in 1985 for the 1986.
That is, I don't know what that's a couple of mil today.
I think just to extrapolate to now.
What would it be?
I think I would have been the highest paid player.
Yeah, oh, jeez, by far.
No.
So today that would be, but it was made up of. So
it'd be about 4 or 5 million today, would it?
It'd be. Probably, yeah. It's so extra. Think about this. So the great Dr. Edelston.
Yep.
Offered this $100,000 cash to sign.
Yep.
On that day, and $450,000 over 3 years.
Well, our friend over opposite can top that. He, in our day, was the highest paid player. He received $80,000. Now,
what?
I am telling you, and I thought I was adequately rewarded and way above the means of getting 45,000. Other clubs couldn't match that. So you equate that to today's language. This man would be up what you're
were
talking.
Were you tempted to go?
Of course you're tempted.
Were you? Well,
tempted, but there's a whole lot of things. And
what were they?
Well, I remember...
Leanne?
No, Leanne had nothing to do with them.
was she part of the bargain?
Exactly.
I immediately... Jeez.
I remember saying to the doctor, there's a few issues. He made that offer.
What, of Leanne?
No, $500,000.
Fuck.
There's a few problems.
Kill some ears.
He said, what problems? I said, well, I've got a new house, I've got a new family, just had a child, my wife just had a child, and I said, I've got a new job. And back then I was a teacher. And he said, what do you do for a job? And I said, I'm a teacher. He said, I'll get you a job, I'll buy you a school. That's what we said, now we're talking.
I'm really sorry about this. I hate to mention this, I've been watching the Bars. Now, I've been watching the Bars and that. You're speaking into the microphone. I have no idea why that is...
It's not working.
And it's working, but I put the earphones on just to listen, and it's echoey, so I'm not sure what's happened. Speak. Go on, you speak. Say what you were going to say.
The rain in Spain falls...
Can you... Is that echoing to you?
Not me, but I can't really hear me. I can hear you.
Okay. Anyhow, we're going. It's all right. Righto, mate. So very good. So you've been...
So I thought, here's this bloke, and Dr. Edelston, and he's, don't speak ill of the dead, he's passed away, but he didn't actually have the money, but he had a couple of friends to put the money up afterwards. The due diligence of the AFL at stage ticked, or the VFL, to find out if he actually should own the club. But then the second offer was when I said no, because he wanted to sign that day. Well, I signed there, I said no negotiation. Second offer was, think about how this second offer was 10 years at $1 million, so 100 grand a year for 10 years, play for five and coach for five. I mean, who can think that far ahead? And I bet you I coached for 1 year, they'd sack me, might have got the money though. So it was a rather interesting little...
So when I speak, see that, Max? Anyhow, so I'm...
If it doesn't work, I'll do it another time.
No, it's worked, but it's just suddenly... No, so I know you got to go. I want to ask you this. You're in a band. Are you still in a band? Wikipedia, Don. I'm sorry, I got this off Wikipedia. A classic rock band called Better Late Than Never.
That's right. So we're all oldies, relatively, a couple of young ones. That was pre-COVID. As you know, with COVID, a lot of live music didn't happen. So with 2 years of not happening, we haven't sort of got back together in the same way, shape or form. But we did classic rock, it was fantastic. But pre-COVID was going really well. Now we've sort of seven people in the band, trying to organise seven people is a bit hard. So never say never. Never say better than never. Never say better late than never.
Well,
we'll see what happens.
What instrument or sing do you
I'll
sing?
I'll break it up.
What, rhythm or lead?
A bit of both. I've had a 1989 Fender Telecaster.
Oh, shit. Really? Nice. Really?
Now, just for the Dorothy Dixer to end, give us your opponents that you found, just the people you played against who you admired or...
I have, like I said, you two blokes.
Yeah, well...
I was young, you two blokes.
Us excluded.
Now, you were teaching me about what football's about in the ruck, so thank you, because I was a kid. and you were the shorter ruckman, and so you knew how to bustle bikes out of the way and push and shove. Sam was the leaper and was pushing me out of the way.
Yep.
I played against Dempsey, Thompson,
yep.
Whale Roberts. Mate, the list goes on.
Yep. All us.
Carl Dietrich. Yep. Just for Madden, 6'10".
Yep.
Towards the end of the career, Sean Wren. I could just go through a whole...
Bam.
Great ruckman. As I said, and I always say to the young people now, every game, when you play, whether win, lose, or draw, what do you learn about the game? What do you learn about yourself? What do you learn about your team? What do you learn about the opponent? What do you learn about the game? Because if you just lose, like Essendon say, a loss on the weekend, a bad loss, and you go, oh, that's terrible, pick something to learn from that you can improve from.
Don, just on the basis that this is very faint here, I don't know what's happened. Oh, I think we've got most of Simon speaking at full volume.
Well, John, can I make...
I've got Max overseeing it, and we can't work out why. So,
could I make a suggestion right here? If we don't get this through, no, I would like Simon to come back in again,
yes,
because I've thoroughly enjoyed this
interview. It's been very, very... I know. No, it works, mate.
Good man.
No, it will work. Simon Madden, star and the next legend, in my opinion, of the AFL. No one plays that many games and kicks that many goals and has that influence on a game. And you've been fascinating in your insight and just common sense stuff, which I don't think is adapted by any club, which is staggering. So thank you very much, the great Don Simon Madden.
Thank you.